Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, Martin Duberman, asks a provocative question in his latest book, Has the Gay Movement Failed? Martin Duberman is a longtime gay rights activist and historian, and he writes that in the 1960s and 70s, radical progressive thought characterized the gay rights movement. Alliances were formed with anti-racist and anti-poverty movements. By contrast, the modern mainstream gay rights movement has forgotten about the poverty, the racism, and the discrimination that affects the queer community. So what do you think? Has the gay movement failed? What changes would you like to see? And what really stands out for you when you look at the history of the gay rights movement? Martin Duberman is a gay rights activist and a longtime historian. He founded and directed the Center for Lesbian and Gay Studies at City University of New York. He has written a number of plays, memoirs, novels, and books about the gay rights movement. His latest is Has the Gay Movement Failed? And Martin Duberman joins us from New York. Hi, Martin. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Well, it's great to have you, Martin. In your book, you write that you are not alone in feeling limited satisfaction with what most gay people are hailing as the speediest success story in all of our country's long history of social protest. After all of these years of writing about the gay rights movement, why did you decide to write about whether the movement has failed?
My feelings of dissatisfaction or incompleteness might be better, really go back quite a long way. I remember when I was one of the people who helped found the National Gay Task Force, as it was then called, in 1973, and I remember writing in my diary, because I came across it recently, that I wondered whether this wasn't simply going to be one more liberal organization rather than a radical one, and by which I meant, to me, I mean, I define liberal as somebody who feels our basic institutions are sound. And there are problems, but with a little tinkering around the edges, everything will be even better. Whereas a radical feels, the word obviously goes to roots, a radical feels that a great deal is in fact wrong with our basic institutions. Radicals differ as to what should be done about that problem, but they're unified in their sense that on issues especially relating to class, racism, and sexism, the movement has narrowed down to the point where, in the eyes of many of those who are disadvantaged, seems to be paying attention mostly, at times even exclusively, to the needs of those who are already privileged.
In the book, you write about what it was like for you to really search for answers. And you read a lot of books from your past, books that you haven't really looked at in a long time. One of those is Out of the Closet, Voices of Gay Liberation, a pioneering anthology by Carla Jay. And before we talk about what struck you when you took those old books off the shelf, when you sat down to write this book, because you have so many experiences in this movement, what really stood out for you in your time as an activist when you really were struggling with these questions or talking with these about these questions with other activists?
I think maybe I hadn't thought about this in advance, but off the top of my head today, I would say that a turning point for me after decades of sporadic discontent with the movement, a turning point came about 3 years ago when a group, a local group I was connected with called Queers for Economic Justice, had to close its doors. What we were trying to do was to come up with an agenda that did, in fact, address the needs of LGBTQ people who were, you know, among the least privileged and least fortunate in our country. And that really, what that amounted to was all that we had, that organization, Queers for Economic Justice, all that we had was a rather ratty small office and one staff member who was devoting her time almost exclusively to trying to organize gay people in shelters, who were living in shelters, organize them to an awareness, at least, where they knew they had some rights, and that if they organized collectively, they might be able to do something about their condition. So, you know, when I compared that with today's human rights campaign, which, lest I heard, this figure may well not be accurate, but lest I heard had an, excuse me, an annual budget of something like $20 million. Queers for Economic Justice had an annual budget which was below $100,000.
Wow.
And that was nickel and diming it all the way. We were relying on donors who were contributing $10 or $20. We didn't even have any big donors. And that the closing of that group made me angry, because there is, in fact, so much need in our community, whether we're talking about homelessness or the plight of gay youth, or our disastrous immigration policies, the ongoing racism of both the culture at large and the gay movement itself, and, of course, you know, the sexism and classism. So that, I'm afraid that's a long answer, but that's, I think, a pretty accurate one.
It's interesting, Martin. I was recently interviewing activists in San Francisco, a very wealthy city, who are trying to pressure the Board of Supervisors to spend more money on various nonprofits. And I interviewed a few trans activists who said that the city budget for trans organizations run by trans people is minuscule. I mean, they're asking for pennies in this wealthy city of San Francisco. I was really surprised by that.
Unfortunately, I'm not very surprised. Even though, as from my perspective anyway, the trans movement does represent the radical edge of the gay movement in general. And that is probably precisely why it's having so much trouble raising funds and, in turn, raising awareness.
You write about inequality. Nearly half of gay African Americans have experienced hunger in the past year, compared with 28% of heterosexual African Americans. For gay Hispanic people, that figure is 33%. According to the 2015 U.S. Trans Survey, for trans Americans, the poverty rate was 29%, and people who are trans are twice as likely to be living in poverty as the general U.S. population. Why do you think, because you write a lot about this in the book, why do you think the gay rights movement, the mainstream gay rights movement, has really veered away from confronting poverty?
To risk giving you a too long answer.
You can. We have time. You can give us a long answer. Yeah, it's fine.
I think so. The root problem, and this is not only long but circuitous, I'm afraid, but it seems to me the root problem lies with what is probably, you know, the central plank in American ideology, namely, if you don't succeed in this culture, because in this culture, opportunity is available to everybody, All the doors are open. All you have to do is work hard and apply yourself. The fact is, very nearly the opposite of that is true. If you don't get on the first rung of the ladder, you have practically no chance of rising above that. And so, you know, those figures about what's going on in the trans community, very, very often, if you don't have, I mean, there are various definitions of class, but I mean, no matter which one you apply, that is what your income level is, what your educational level is, and what the status, the social status of the job you're holding down is. If you apply any of those, you will find trans people at the very bottom rung. And they simply don't have the resources. Plus, they're facing simultaneously, you know, an enormous amount of public hostility. So if you put those two together, there really isn't much breathing room. I believe many trans people feel that some progress recently is being made in terms of visibility, but certainly not enough progress so that they would qualify. I don't mean to be too acid here, but that they would qualify for membership in the Human Rights Campaign.
Today we are speaking with gay rights activist and historian Martin Duberman. We're talking about his new book, Has the Gay Movement Failed? And what are your thoughts on these issues? When you look at the statistics, they speak for themselves. The poverty rate for trans people in the U.S. is 29%. And Martin writes about whether the gay movement has really failed. When you look at the radical gay movements of the 60s and the 70s, various groups like the Gay Liberation Front, and then you compare that to some of the more modern movements today and the modern organizations today, what are your thoughts on the changes that we have seen, and why isn't there more of a focus on issues like poverty and class and trans homelessness, for example? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. If you're a longtime gay rights activist or a young gay rights activist, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on these issues? Now I would like to welcome Lexi Adsit to the show. Lexi is a transgender Latina writer, storyteller, and stand-up comedian based in the East Bay. Hi, Lexi. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Lexi, what are your overall thoughts about Martin's provocative question, has the gay movement failed, especially when you look at the work that it does or tries to do when it comes to poverty and class issues?
Yeah, and I just want to start off by saying I'm a really big fan of Martin's. His book actually gave me, or his book Stonewall, gave me a lot of insight into the lives of Sylvia Rivera and other Stonewall veterans that have, you know, often been erased from our histories. And for a little bit of context, I was born and raised in the Bay Area, and I've been involved with nonprofit organizations and social movements for the past 10 years. And I was, you know, listening a little earlier, and I, you know, couldn't agree more with a number of the points that Martin brought up. It might even suggest pushing them a little further, because I think, you know, from the 60s and 70s, there were so many intersectional radical moments and coalitions. And then, you know, the state really worked overtime to dismantle those and police those. And we saw the emergence of nonprofits as a system, which creates a very complicated dynamic between the rich and poor, with nonprofits kind of acting as like a middleman for programs. I think the modern mainstream movement hasn't just failed its roots, but it has really been co-opted by these powers of capitalism and the nonprofit industrial complex to try and create even more profit off of our lives and our identities.
And Lexi, you're the managing director of Peacock Rebellion, a trans woman and femme of color-centered based arts group in East Oakland. We were just talking about how difficult it is for queer nonprofit organizations that specifically focus on these issues to just make it, especially in a place like the Bay Area where it's so expensive. What has your experience been like?
Yeah, so this is our sixth year of operation, and our budget is hovering around $125,000. Our executive director actually paid into the organization for the first 4 years of our existence, where, you know, the max budget we had, I think, was like $65,000. Recently with the, you know, Time magazine had the whole transgender tipping point. So there's been a number of folks in philanthropy who have worked to redirect some of those resources to trans communities and really smaller nonprofits that are working around class and race. And one of the organizations that's really good to check out and has a lot more data about that is funders for LGBTQ issues. They're, you know, currently working on a campaign with donors and other philanthropists to really increase the amount of annual donations to trans organizations. But yeah, it is really, really hard. We often have to hold like various jobs. At one time, we've only had one paid staff member in 6 years. Our funding is often not multi-year stable funding, but these kind of one-year either general operating grants or program grants, which a lot of funders are foundations really want to fund. They don't want to fund the general operating just because they like to see the results. And so you're really nickel and diming it throughout everything. And with the astronomical cost of living in the Bay Area now, it is an everyday challenge for us just to keep our doors open.
Lexi Adsit is a transgender Latina writer and storyteller and managing director of Peacock Rebellion, a trans women-centered based arts group in East Oakland in California. Martin Duberman is a gay rights activist and historian, author of many plays, memoirs, and books. His latest is Has the Gay Movement Failed? Martin, as a longtime activist who has many connections in the movement, What do the conversations sound like when you speak with gay rights activists who work at these more mainstream groups that are well-funded? Or, for example, I was just thinking about the millions of dollars that wealthy people poured into the gay marriage movement. When you talk to them about, you know, groups like Lexi's who are just barely getting by, what do those conversations sound like?
They're heated. Let me first just say hello to Lexi. We don't know each other, but we're on opposite coasts, and hopefully someday we will meet. My travel days are over, but Lexi, hopefully you'll come to New York at some point. I would like to go back by way of answering that last question. I would like to go back a bit to what Lexi said about the state. My analysis would be a little bit different in that one of the most distressing things to me about the current state of consciousness in the LGBTQ movement, is that the current agenda, now recently completed, that is the agenda of marriage rights and the ability to kill our enemies equal to that of other Americans. It's going to be curious to see what kind of a turn, if any, the human rights campaign makes in the direction of more inclusiveness. But one point that I think is important to stress, and it bothers me a great deal, and that is the fact that the gay agenda was so entirely absorbed in those two issues of marriage and the military for so long, that was not any kind of plot. It wasn't a coup d'etat, a seizure of power by a couple of well-placed gay honchos. The sad fact, it seems to me, is that the large majority of LGBT people in this country support the drive of the human rights campaign to fully assimilate us into mainstream values and mainstream acceptance, even though our history and our perspective and our culture do contain a standing critique of those very same mainstream institutions. We're turning our backs, or the human rights campaign is, we're turning our backs on what it is that we can best contribute to the mainstream. It isn't by becoming exactly like them. Mm-hmm. Rather, it is sharing the ways in which we are different and how much we have learned from our special experience and history of oppression, particularly in the areas of gender and sexuality. In saying we're just folks, please let us in, we promise to behave, you know, properly like all good Americans do. And yes, we will get married and settle down monogamously, and we will have our 2.4 children. And whenever you decide we should go to war, we will be among the earliest to enlist. I mean, that's nonsense in terms of who the majority of gay people, in fact, are. But what embedded in that analysis, I think, is an even sadder situation, and that is that for a long time now, I mean, the studies go way back, for a long time now, no matter what an individual's actual income, to use one gauge, may be, the large majority of Americans, when asked how they define themselves in terms of class, their answer is middle class. Mm. Mm. Even though, I mean, today this particular statistic happens, I know to be accurate since I've been just in the last week been using it for something I'm right, but at the moment, 43 million Americans are living at the poverty level or below it. And the poverty level today for a family of four is $24,000. Mm-hmm. 43 million Americans, that's like 15% of our total population. And God knows how many, I suspect vast numbers, are living barely above the poverty level.
That's right. And last week we did a show about the Poor People's Campaign, which has active movements and groups in about 40 states across the country. 2,500 people have been arrested over the last 6 weeks. There was a massive rally in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. Really amazing. The majority of the speakers were women of color, and yet it just really didn't get that much media attention. But you can find that show at yourcallradio.org. Martin Duberman is a gay rights activist and historian. He's written a number of plays and novels and books. His latest is Has the Gay Movement Failed? We're also joined today by Lexi Adsit, a transgender Latina writer, storyteller, stand-up comedian, and managing director of Peacock Rebellion, a trans women and femme of color-centered based arts group located in East Oakland. And today, that's the provocative question that we're asking. Martin just wrote a book called Has the Gay Movement Failed? This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation about the homeless crisis across the country. What changes when a nonprofit serving the homeless is led by people who used to be clients? We will speak with people who used to be on the streets and are now running homeless organizations. We'll also ask them, what would a future look like where homeless nonprofits were eliminated and not needed in this country? Today, we are speaking about the gay rights movement. Martin Duberman is out with a new book called Has the Gay Movement Failed? He is a longtime gay rights activist and historian. He founded and directed the Center for Lesbian and Gay Studies at City University of New York. We're also joined by Lexi Adsit, a transgender Latina writer, storyteller, and managing director of Peacock Rebellion, a trans woman-centered East Oakland-based arts group. And also, if you have an opinion on this, but maybe haven't been involved in the movement, but maybe you go to Pride, what are your thoughts about how that's changed? And when you hear about the radical roots of the gay rights movement, and then look at where it is today, what stands out for you? You can email yourcall@kalw.org or call us 866-798-8255. Lexi, you said that you were really affected by Martin's books and what you learned about Stonewall. What, as a young trans person, what really goes through your mind when you learn about the radical roots of the gay movement? Like Martin, for example, opens his book talking about the Gay Liberation Front, the movement that arose in New York after the 1969 Stonewall riots.
Yeah, oh gosh, what a big question.
Well, I mean, when you look at, I'll narrow it for you. When you look at the radical roots of the gay rights movement, and then you look at Pride, I have some friends who went, and all of their bracelets had corporate names on them. Right. I mean, it was like corporate booth after corporate booth at Pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about, just as a young trans person, what are your thoughts about the radical roots of this movement? And what goes through your mind when you learn more about it?
I think more than anything, I feel validated in my own experiences and struggles. You know, something that I've dealt with as I've gotten older is two of these roots that Martin talked about earlier, about economic issues of you know, living in poverty and also social issues of, you know, the exclusion or harassment or attacks that, like, trans people often face. And growing up, I came out really young. I came out at 13. And, you know, from a young age, as I got older, it was like every couple of years there was some sort of traumatic event that like happened in my life based in my gender or ethnic identity and like the ways in which people would treat me because I was a young trans Latina, and so having to struggle in these modern moments, you think it's so often we internalize that and think like, oh, it's something that I've done wrong. It's something that I'm doing wrong. I'm a failure, et cetera. But, you know, being able to read Stonewall, Sylvia Rivera was kicked out at like age 11 and started as a sex worker and even went to jail for defending herself when one of her clients tried to or was starting to beat her up. And that's really reminiscent of C.C. McDonald's case. And so I think more than anything, it's that we're seeing these types of violence kind of happen in cycles. And that it's important to kind of like stop and think and reflect, okay, like what are the root issues and how can we really intervene in, you know, not just the co-optation of our politics, but our survival and our ability to change our everyday lives so that we can have basic needs met and also, like, hopefully thrive and dream beyond that.
Martin, when you taught at City University of New York, how did you talk to your students about the roots of the radical movement and then looking at groups like the Human Rights Campaign? And what really stood out for you and how your students responded?
My students at CUNY, I had earlier been teaching in the Ivy League, and my students at CUNY were such a relief because the arrogance and sense of entitlement that I found in the Ivy League was not happily reproduced with CUNY students. This is an example that is almost impossible to believe now, like 30 years or so later. But when I was teaching at Princeton, I was teaching a course on slavery and anti-slavery. And I gave a lecture on race. What does science currently know about it, etc. And I had one undergraduate come up to me after the lecture. He had a white undergraduate, and he had a pronounced Southern accent. And with a smirk on his face, he said to me, "Sir, you don't really believe that blacks are the equal of whites, do you?"
Wow.
Now, things are somewhat better at Princeton. They're a good deal better at Princeton and elsewhere in the Ivy League. But that's a sample of the kinds of obstacles that we all face in dealing with, you know, the kind of entrenched racism, classism, and sexism that have so long characterized our culture. You know, I do want to add, again, Lexi set something off in me that I, by way of agreement with her, I wanted to add that one of the problems, it seems to me, today in trying to enlarge the constituency for left-wing issues and concerns is that the general, or if you like, the straight left in this country is really quite oblivious to us. They couldn't care less. They have, and this particular link is particularly distressing because it seems to me what's going on currently is that the now popular straight radical publication Jacobin, which includes a circle of young enthusiasts who, you know, are right on so many issues. But I've been reading the literature that is emerging from, you know, the people who helped mobilize Bernie Sanders' campaign and so forth, and the people surrounding Jacobin magazine. And they, when they talk about plans for a left wing future, a coalition of groups and organizations in order to achieve a level of power that might in fact change the society, they barely mention the LGBTQ movement. And the reason in part, I think, that they don't mention us or show any sign that they feel we have something special to contribute is that they buy the argument being put forward by groups like the Human Rights Campaign that we're just folks. That, in fact, we are utterly middle-class folks, and we are so wedded to the system as it is that the straight left, if anything, has contempt for us, thanks to the argument of the Human Rights Campaign. But, I mean, it goes beyond that because, you know, homophobia in this country remains alive and well. Something like in the last year, something like nearly 300 anti-gay pieces of legislation of various kinds have been passed on the state level. But among left-wing radical groups, straight—I hate this terminology—but there isn't any real sense of awareness that a gay left-wing perspective exists that might significantly inform the general left about its agenda, because its agenda currently is almost entirely economic. And God knows it's important to stress economic issues and class issues, but there's a lot more that's wrong in this society. And what makes even my temperamental optimism drain away is that neither the mainstream gay movement nor the straight radical left-wing movement are paying any attention to the fact that there is a gay left and we have a lot to contribute to any coalition movement. If only anybody would open their ears.
And Martin, you point out in your book, Has the Gay Movement Failed?, that very prominent progressive writers will focus on things like economic justice, environmental justice, racial justice, but almost always they leave out LGBT justice.
They do indeed, and they long have. It's in part because they've persuaded themselves that the kinds of issue that occupy the gay community are whether or not we should fire the current nanny and try to employ a better one, or whether or not we should get a second home in the Hamptons or on Fire Island. This is the image of us that has been sold through our own national organizations and has infected the media, so that when people think of gay people, what automatically comes to mind is the classic image of the mainstream middle class driver.
Lexi, what would you add?
I would agree a lot, and I don't have I wish I had like some sort of knowledge of a group that was really doing that work, but from what I've seen, everything that Martin said, I agree with on that point. And I would say that, in the Bay Area, in the communities that I am working with and so often navigating through, we are doing a lot of that work for and by ourselves, and most often because we have to. Trans Women of Color starting organizations because we have to, because nobody's going to, either serve us at shelters or soup kitchens or, you know, there's other issues accessing services. And those are really the lifelines that are keeping so many people alive right now. And it's, you know, I think it gets really complicated when you think of where to focus your efforts of, we clearly need a left coalition. And at the same time, so many of our people on the ground are struggling just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, something that should really be thought of in any sort of left coalition that's intersectional is thinking about the basic necessities of our people. You know, we've had lead and water in Flint, Michigan, and that's not just the only place where there's unsafe drinking water. And homeless is on the rise, and, you know, drug usage rates have not necessarily gone down, and there's, you know, just all these countless issues that need to be tackled, and so often we're stuck on the front lines of fighting them that we're unable to participate in an actual political conversation of or coalition to try and shift things.
May I add something to that?
Please.
Lexi and I clearly agree about a great deal. I was simply going to point to the fact that there is at least some ground for optimism. As upset as Lexi and I both are about things as they currently are, and that optimism, I think, relates to what is going on the local level among young queer left-wing people. I mean, there are a number of local and regional groups springing up. Probably the most prominent is SONG, which is based in Atlanta. Southerners on New Ground, SONG. But there's also, you know, the longstanding Audre Lorde Project. There's the Sylvia Rivera Law Project. There are groups like Fierce. There are any number of them, and they're not getting publicity. They're operating, as Lexi said, on tiny budgets. They can't do all that they want to do, but then they not only exist, but they are apparently growing. And therein, I think, lies whatever grounds we can come up with for hope and optimism. Because it's the new young generation. I hope we all survive long enough so that we can see it come into power, because I really think they represent a set of values which is much closer to the one that Lexi and I share, and very different from the one that characterizes the current generation in power.
Martin Duberman is a longtime gay rights activist and historian. His latest book is called Has the Gay Movement Failed? We're also joined by Lexi Adsit, a transgender Latina writer, stand-up comedian, and managing director of Peacock Rebellion, a trans women and femme of color-centered based arts group in East Oakland. And let's hear from Kate in San Francisco. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose.
Oh, hi, Kate.
Hey. So I'm super excited that you're doing this show. Your guests are fabulous, and I'm really happy to know about Martin Duberman's new book. I just wanted to give a little context. I mean, I can absolutely attest to what you're saying, Martin, about the left. I mean, there was just recently an experience in a coalition that was trying to build an anti-war march where an old labor activist said that, like, there was nothing in the call about queer liberation at all. in 10 points nothing about LGBT. And so when I brought that up, he said, well, you know, everybody's going to want to hang their ornaments on this thing. And, I mean, fortunately, that position didn't prevail, but I couldn't believe I was even hearing it. So, you know, I absolutely agree with you, but I also want to just reflect that sometimes I think we're a bit harsh in our own community of marginalizing ourselves. We on the queer left marginalize ourselves sometimes and sort of cede ground to the mainstream gay organizations that we don't need to, you know, and I think that every movement, every social movement in this country at a certain point when they achieve a certain status, you know, and start to succeed in some of their narrowest goals gets co-opted, or their efforts to co-opt it. And I think that sometimes we exceptionalize that with the queer movement and the women's movement, and sort of we start to talk about our own movement as if those organizations that try to speak for us in the most bourgeois way actually are the whole movement. And so I just don't want us to be exceptionalizing ourselves so much. You know, I think that we're just like every other social movement. They try to crush you, and then they try to co-opt you, and we just need to keep making ourselves visible.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more, Kate. I mean, it sets off all kinds of things in me. One is, I think a lot of us, from our, from having been, having grown up oppressed, we carry around a lot of anger and even rage sometimes. And it's always safer to deposit anger on those that you're closest to because you're pretty sure they're not going to turn around and kill you in response. And so, yes, it's true that sometimes I know for myself that I'm sometimes overly severe when I talk about the mainstream gay movement. Besides, I know personally individuals, you know, who work at Lambda Legal Defense or the National Task Force, and I also know any number of queer people who are like two of the three women who founded Black Lives Matter are queer women. And that's certainly, you know, a large scale movement. I take your admonition to heart and will try to be a kinder person.
Well, thank you for calling in, Kate. Lexi, do you have anything to add on that issue? I mean, what's interesting about the group that you are managing director of, the Peacock Rebellion, you describe how one of your founders was burning out hard from unsustainable roles in social justice movements. And, you know, the realities facing the queer and trans community are devastating. If you just search for people who've been murdered or just there's so much racism and discrimination happening on a regular basis now, and these communities bore the brunt of a lot of this. So what would you say, and how do you all talk about this issue of you know, burning out, and then the issues that Kate raises?
I think I want to address Kate's part first, because I do agree, and it can be so hard to remember that, like, we are, you know, not these radical fairy godmothers that can, like, wave our wands and just change everything overnight. When so often that, you know, I know for myself, like, sometimes that's been what's felt like this superhero Wonder Woman syndrome of, you know, whether you're organizing in a nonprofit or in community, working 60, 80 hours a week, and everybody's relying on you for things, and you get an inch, and that feels like 10 miles. I forgot where I was going with that. But additionally, I think Martin also brought up a really great point about rage and trauma. And I think more often it is so important. A big part of my journey was to go to therapy and really start to heal from some of those traumas that I'd been carrying, like wounds. Mm. Not everybody has access to that. And access to quality mental health care is extremely important for us, especially in this time, that I think would really drastically improve our sort of ability to engage with movements and have those harder conversations about, like, oh, why is it important to have, you know, queer justice as a core component of an anti-war moment, you know? Something I've been trying to remind myself of is that we really sometimes have to be a lot more patient, and some of the most important organizing you can do is the kind of organizing you would do with your family. So having people over for dinner and having those conversations while breaking bread with them, or showing up for, you know, things that are important to them, not just through work, but also personally. If there's a holiday that people celebrate, you know, offer to bring some food by, if it's culturally appropriate. I think sometimes we are so absorbed by, like, the social media, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, mm-hmm. That we have to remember to go have, like, face-to-face discussions with people.
Well, we will definitely continue to follow this conversation. Lexi, I hope you make it to New York one day soon to meet Martin in person. Lexi Adsit is a transgender Latina writer, and Martin Duberman is a longtime gay rights activist and historian. His latest book is Has the Gay Movement Failed? Lexi and Martin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show, and Luis Hernandez, who is our intern. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.